Nicholas Harbert is one of the world's leading plant biologists. With research and publishing, his scientific life leaves little room for contemplation. But Harbert found the time to take a year off and study the thalecress, a common weed growing in a churchyard. The journal he kept that year resulted in the book Seed to Seed, The Secret Life of Plants. Here he is with a reading.
Wednesday, 11th of February. How did this thalecress come to be growing where it is? What brought it here? A scatter of seeds must have fallen to the ground within the perimeter of the grave. Some fell on stones, got wet when it rained, germinated, then perished when the stone surface dried. Others landed in places of more persistent moistness, perhaps in soil in the shelter of a chip of gravel. Here they survived the vulnerable passage from seed to young plant. These seeds would have germinated in August 2003. Then, during September, October, the thalecress plant established itself as a young seedling, with a small leaf rosette expanding across bare earthen grit and roots tunnelling into the earth below. In November, the growth of the plant first slowed, then halted as the cold intensified. Now, in February of this new year, its growth is beginning again.
That's Nicholas Harbert reading from his diary called Seed to Seed, The Secret Life of Plants. Steve Paulson wanted to know why Harbert would take an entire year off to sit and watch a weed.
I wanted to write something in which scientific facts are presented as part of a portrait, if you like, of the mind that's thinking about them. So hence, I suppose, it does become very personal in the sense that it depicts a lot of the kind of thoughts and just kind of imaginative processes that go on, in my brain as a result of doing the kind of things that I do.
Mm-hmm. Could you read another diary entry for us?
Sure. Life is in layers. We can see it at different levels of abstraction, on different scales. There are the molecules, the proteins, the carbohydrates, the cellulose, and the DNA. There are the internal compartments of the cells, the walls, the cytoplasm, the vacuole, the nucleus. There are the cells themselves, the thalecress in St. Mary's Churchyard, the chestnuts surrounding it, the nearby fen, the more distant North Sea. And a question forms in my mind, an unexpected question. Is the whole of the cell alive, or is only a part of it? This is a question I haven't previously considered. A simple question of such obvious importance that I can't imagine why I've never thought of it before. What is alive and what is not? Where is the boundary between life and the absence of it? A thalecress plant is alive. The cells of that plant are alive, but at the very centre of most of those cells is a vacuole. Is the water inside that vacuole alive? Or the walls that surround the cells, are they alive? I think the cytoplasm of the cells is alive. It moves, it respires, it metabolises. Yet it is made of molecules which are, it seems to me, not. The genes. Are the genes alive?
So what did you conclude about some of those questions? Are the genes alive?
Well, I think that there are a number of questions which the book poses, which it continues to consider as it goes along, and I'm not convinced that I actually come to an answer often. But nevertheless, I think they're important things for us to think about.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me something about the thalecress's biology. What makes this plant grow and flourish?
It's an opportunistic weed. It's a plant that specialises in arriving somewhere and growing there as fast as it possibly can and making seeds, and that's its goal in life, if you like. And so it's adapted to a relatively rapid life cycle for those reasons.
Now, by choosing this particular experiment that you've done to pick one plant that happens to be growing out in a churchyard, mm-hmm. It seems to me you ran the considerable risk that something would happen to that plant, that it would be destroyed in the middle of your experiment, and that nearly happened on March 11th when you happened to be in the graveyard when a slug crawled onto your plant and started chomping on it.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you describe what happened?
Yeah, I was just kind of standing by the grave. Actually, at the time I was looking at some of the raindrops on some of the plants nearby, and then I looked back at the sort of part of the landscape, if you like, where the plant was growing, and I realised that this slug was kind of getting closer and closer, and I watched it get closer, and then I watched it start munching away on my my favorite plant.
Well, in your diary, you say that that whole experience, seeing what had happened to your plant, had made you fear death.
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes you think about these things that, you know, I guess we all think about now and again, but, you know, tend to suppress, I suppose. And I mean, I think that's something that I wanted to think about a bit in the book, was about how this sort of cycle of precarious life and eventual death is something that we all live through.
And then something miraculous happened. It turned out that there were some new flower buds.
There was a fractured second before the full recognition of what I was seeing, and then I realized. It's wonderful, a reprieve. For 3 days I've given this plant up for dead, but now there's a possibility that it will live. A fragile hope? Yes, but a hope nonetheless. For a moment I thought of resurrection, although of course it had never really been dead.
Now your invocation of the resurrection is so striking, and of course it's worth pointing out that you're making this study in the graveyard of a church.
Yes, absolutely right. And I think there are a number of, how do I say it? I mean, imagery that's sort of related to the Christian tradition in which I was brought up, although no longer a practicing member of, I think do permeate the book, actually. Science has revealed a different narrative. That there is no grand design, no power checking that all is going according to plan. We change by random mutation. If that change results accidentally in an improvement in function, it persists. This new narrative is perhaps less comforting, less attractive than the old, but there is still space for appreciation. I think we should assert the continuing appropriateness of all, find a way of leaving behind the idea of divine purpose without simultaneously abandoning a sense of wonder.
You're asking some pretty profound questions throughout this whole book. Where does life come from, and what
Indeed.
Happens when we die? I mean, these are the kinds of questions that the great religious thinkers have struggled with over the centuries. And I guess I wonder if there was something sacred for you as you were studying and looking and watching the progress of your little Thalecress.
Oh, absolutely. There is something sacred about what we're doing, really, in terms of, you know, looking at it and in terms of the world of which it's a part.
So is your sense of wonder, of awe in the face of nature, has that become your alternative to faith in God?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
You didn't know I was going to put you on the spot here, did you?
No, you asked me a difficult one there, I have to say. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I think all I'm saying is that, that I think that, you know, there is this idea that I think is quite prevalent out there that what science tells us is kind of hard and doesn't help us feel about our place in the world. And I think what I'm trying to say is that I think if you think about it or look at it in the right kind of way, that maybe it can help you to feel a little more comfortable than perhaps you'd thought before.
Nicholas Harbert is one of the world's leading plant biologists and the author of the book Seed to Seed. He spoke with Steve Paulson.